ramping up local testing for COVID-19. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this morning, more testing is a must to fight this pandemic. We'll have an update from the downtown Lot J testing site to see how it's going. You can join us with all your questions about testing for COVID right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, how local restaurants are turning into small grocery stores to meet changing consumer demand in this pandemic. But first this morning, here's the latest on the spread of COVID in Florida. Statewide, the Department of Health reports 27,869 coronavirus cases in the state and 867 deaths. In our area, there are 1,481 cases and 36 deaths. A new fatality, a 68-year-old woman, was reported overnight here in Duval County. Now, when the state took over running the Lot J coronavirus testing site at TIAA Bankfield, the goal was to test more patients a day than the 250 the federal authorities had been able to test. So the number of tests they were doing at that site every day initially went up to 400. But on Thursday, the Florida National Guard, which has been deployed to help at the site, told our partner News for Jax they are now testing up to 750 people a day. We want to get an update on how that's going, so right now we're pleased to welcome Lauren Luna. She is the deployed PIO, Public Information Officer, on site at the Jacksonville Regional COVID-19 testing site at Lot J, and she's on the phone. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, and so good to have you on the show. And as we talk about ramping up testing in Florida to get a handle on this pandemic, what are your questions for Lauren Luna? She's on site at Lot J. It's 549-2937 to join us as we talk testing for COVID. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open too. So, you know, Lauren, when this first began, there were really strict criteria for testing, and that has really changed over the last several weeks. What's the current criteria for who can come downtown to Lot J at the football stadium and get a test?
So the current criteria that we have is that you must be either showing respiratory symptoms that could look like a cough or a more deep agonal cough. If you don't have that, you could fall into the following categories. Have an underlying health condition that could be asthma, cancer, diabetes, autoimmune diseases. You would need to have been in close contact with somebody who tested positive for COVID-19, have traveled somewhere where COVID-19 has widespread transmission, somewhere like New York, California, et cetera, been on a cruise recently, or fall into the first responder healthcare worker. That it could include borders and customs patrol, that could be TSA agents, any of those would fall into that category.
549-2937 as we talk about COVID testing. Let me ask you as a follow-up, since so many people are asymptomatic with this disease, according to public health experts, why can't an asymptomatic person come and be tested? Because there's a chance they could have the disease, not know it, and be spreading it to a more vulnerable person.
That is true, and that could be happening. Right now, the guidance we've been given from the state level, since, as you mentioned earlier, the state has taken these over from being a federal site, what they've done is they've come up with a prioritization. So this would be the prioritization to be tested in this area. I know that there's many walk-up clinics, there's doctor's offices doing testing around here. So one of the things to keep in mind was these three sites. So we have a site here in Jacksonville. There's one in Orange County and then one in Miami. Those sites were intended to be one tool in a toolbox to help fight COVID-19. So while we can't test everybody, that would be wonderful if we could. Right now, the opening that we have is for the criteria that I had listed.
Okay. And of course, as I mentioned, the Florida National Guard has been deployed at the site, and you are setting a goal of testing up to 750 people a day. Is that right?
Yes, we are able to test up to 750 a day, and that came through from the governor. He's been pushing for more testing, and the Florida Department of Emergency Management together, they worked together and they were instrumental in getting that change to us so that we could open it up. And yesterday we were able to test 403, which is great since we were closed on Sunday due to weather and those high wind speeds. And so far as of close of business yesterday, the site had tested 75, just over 7,500.
Okay. So, and that's a lot of people. Jacksonville is actually ahead of the curve in testing, although we're still only testing, at least through the public sites, about 1% of the population, according to some research I've seen on this. Let me ask you, too, the federal authorities left, the National Guard came in. It seems that you're doing a better job testing more people. Tell us about your resources.
So one thing to keep in mind is when the federal government set up all of these sites, is they had hundreds throughout the nation. So they weren't, and as everybody knows, supplies were low right in the beginning. They continued to be low, and PPE is still something that's a challenge to get. So these missions that we're performing, you have to have everything. So if you don't have enough gloves, you cannot open. So the struggle for the federal government was that they had just over 100 sites nationwide that they were trying to find this hard to get items for. So with the state taking it over, they're able to dial it more into a local level. So I know that mayors in certain counties have asked manufacturers to start helping to make things that they would need to do testing. So all of that plays into a role. And the federal government came in the beginning really to just set us up for success. So they had Health and Human Services at each of these sites. And through them, we were able to get at least started. And now we're able to continue it on a local level. So the Jacksonville site was very unique. The city really got involved right at the beginning. They wanted to help get this up and running. So as you're aware, JFRD came in, and they were the operational support that was still managed by Florida Department of Emergency Management, but the operation was done by JFRD, and now that's switched over to the National Guard. So these sites are quite expensive to run weekly, and it's nice to know that the mayor, he was really encouraging and wanting this site to stay here, because that was a conversation that was had with each of the mayors in the areas where these sites are. And he was able to express to the governor, yes, I still want this site there. And they were able to get assistance from the National Guard.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Lauren Luna, the public information officer on site at Lot J. That's the COVID-19 testing site being run now by the Florida National Guard. What are your questions about COVID testing? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Now, Lauren, there have been long lines of cars for many days now outside the football stadium, people waiting to get their test. They seem to have lightened up in recent days. What are your observations about the number of people showing up to get a test?
So what we've noticed is there is a rush in the morning, and I appreciate that because those are the people who want to guarantee they're going to get tested. But then we've really noticed a drop off right around that 11 to noon mark. And people are pretty much just driving right in and getting tested. So I would encourage, you know, if you think, oh, I may not get tested today, I need to try another day, just come out. We, last hour yesterday, we only had 26 patients come through. And as I mentioned, we only hit 403, so we were well below that 750 limit. And I know this site, it's fulfilling for us to do the most good in this community. And what that looks like is we're following our mission that we've been given from the state level, and just trying to test as many people as we can that come through here. And it is important to note, if these tests that we have here, they're meant to, if you're in that incubation period of 2 to 14 days. So I know there's a lot of questions about, you know, asymptomatic, and that is a possibility. But we're hoping that we can at least give answers to those people who are either symptomatic or fall into the categories. And one of the nicest things I think about that transition from federal to state is that now, instead of waiting for a phone call from a results center, they only tried 3 times, which when you think about how many thousands of people they're returning calls to, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm,
but
sure.
Now you're able to actually go online and check your results.
Oh, that's good
so
to hear.
You don't have to worry about missing a phone call and not being able to find your results and having to go through a lot of departments to get it. So it's very nice that you can just go right online, check your results. And some people have gotten their results as soon as the next day. Others, it sometimes takes 2 to 3 days. It really depends on the lab's backlog.
That's still less of a backlog than we were seeing, people waiting up to 8 days. So that's encouraging. All right, let's go to some calls now as we take a closer look at the Lot J COVID testing site. people lining up in their cars every morning to see if they're positive. 549-2937. Dan is in Jacksonville. Hi, Dan. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks.
I'm maybe one of those people that fell through the cracks. I got tested last Tuesday, and I haven't had any symptoms after the first few days, but I keep going on the portal, and there's no information for me there. I've emailed them, and I don't get responses back.
Okay.
What do I do?
So you need to know your results. So thank you for that call. Lauren, what should Dan do to get his results?
Dan, so what I'd like to do is if there's a way to get your contact information, I can reach out to the lab and see why that would be. Is it there? I know there's three things. It could say inconclusive, positive, or negative. Is it by any chance saying inconclusive?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that if you want to get my information off the air. That'd be wonderful.
Okay, Dan, I'm going to put you on hold and get your number, and we will have Lauren connect with you after this segment. How's that?
Yeah, it's great. Thank you very much, Lauren.
Sure. And our call screener, our call screener will get your number, and we'll relay it to Lauren. That's Dan in Jacksonville. Let's go to Geraldine in Five Points. Hi, Geraldine.
Hi, good morning. I'm 80 years old, and I live in senior housing, and I only have public transportation. Where can I get tested?
Okay, let's talk about that, Lauren, because the Lot J site is car dependent. Everyone's driving up in their cars. Where can people go around town that, you know, they need to ride the bus? I'm looking online to answer your question, Geraldine, but first, Lauren, I'll kick it over to you.
Definitely don't suggest taking public transportation just because if you are an asymptomatic carrier or you are symptomatic, you could be potentially infecting others. I know that the city is working on mobile testing teams. They're working with the National Guard on those to go into assisted living facilities. I know that's the first step. And then the second step that they've been discussing is setting up different testing areas at different sites. And those would be walk-ups. So you would potentially be able to walk up to one of those. So I know that that's something they're working on this week, and they hope to have that up and running, I believe, within the next 2 weeks.
And Geraldine, UF Health Jax is doing walk-up testing this week at UF Health's Brentwood Family Medicine Clinic. That's at 3465 Village Center Drive. They're doing it from 1 to 4 p.m. today. You can walk up and get the test there. You know, you could take an Uber or a cab, maybe, if you can't drive yourself. And if you want, I can also put you on hold so that we can talk to you on the phone later this morning and brainstorm how you can get your test. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to put you on hold and get your number as well. And I'll give you a call after the show, Geraldine. All right. Thanks for your call.
Where is this site?
The address is 3465 Village Center Drive. This is UF Health's Brentwood Family Medicine Clinic. And they are doing walk-up testing starting at 1 o'clock today. But I'm going to put you on hold, and I'll give you a call in a little bit, Geraldine. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Lots of calls as we talk about COVID testing. John is on the line in Duval County. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I guess you kind of answered my question because, you know, obviously this virus is going to be with us for a long term. And I was wondering what would testing look like in a year? I mean, obviously, you know, we can't keep driving, going down to a lot and getting tested. So I was wondering, would we eventually be able to move testing into, say, hospitals or like a care spot or the Walmarts? Like you do for the flu shot? I mean, is there any plans to, you know, venture this out further and more into the medical community as opposed to just walk-ups or going into a parking lot?
So right. Right. To make it more widely available, easier to do. Lauren, that's certainly a question millions of Americans have.
So in theory, that definitely makes sense. One of the reasons they set up these sites out here was to not overwhelm the hospital system. So the way that they have to protect it, so I'm sure you've heard of those 5-minute rapid tests that they do have. And those are great in giving them a response right away. However, when they're done in a medical setting, it puts those medical professionals at risk. So here, what they've done is they have nurses that are contracted through the state, the National Guard's here, so that if somebody did come back positive, that they're not utilizing the hospital's limited resources. So that was one of the thoughts in putting this together. So I know that there has been conversation about how to continue this further in. One of the things to note is that the test that we have here, it's not the antibodies test. It's the test that if you're in the incubation period or you have it, that's when you come back positive. So something like that would be wonderful for the antibodies test that they're trying to get off the ground and really dialing in for accuracy. And that would be able to test whether you previously had it, currently have it, or have had it. So that would be the kind of thing that would be great to have maybe in a hospital system. But for now, the priority has to be the people who have it. So it's kind of a tiered system, and they do that too. It's just a priority thing so that, like you said, looking down further the line, that would be great. I know that the governor is working on getting those rapid tests and those antibodies tests, but we're one of 50 states who need them here.
Exactly right.
Just about us.
Here's an email for you from Nick. He writes, testing without tracking is just surrendering to the virus. The only way to get ahead of this is make the virus visible by tracking the actual path of the infection. So that gets us to the whole idea of more widespread contact tracing, tracing the contacts of people who are positive or who are showing symptoms. There's not much of that going on. And other countries that have deployed that more aggressively have been able to bend their curve more quickly. And so, Lauren, where are health authorities and the Guard on maybe deploying folks to contact trace to track the spread of the virus?
So I don't have answers on that. My purview is really the site and the kind of testing we do here. I can say that I know that these cases, they at least all do get reported to the health department. So if you look, Bing has a really great tracker that you can actually dial it into your county to see how many cases. And it's really a responsibility thing. So if you come back positive, you need to be notifying everybody that you've had contact with. And that's part of being a responsible, you know, member of the society, similar to if you had an STD and you needed to notify your partners. So you're definitely encouraged to be honest with those you've been around because you could have unknowingly put them in risk. And sometimes that's an uncomfortable conversation. But again, if you're an asymptomatic carrier and you didn't know, it's not on you. You know, it's not like you could have known, especially if you don't have any symptoms at all. So we encourage people to notify those they've been around. That's a question that's definitely better answered by the health department. They would be able to give you a more clear answer on that one.
Okay. Lots of questions for you as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Michelle writes, are they turning people away at Lot J, or is everyone who wants to get a test able to? And will the site stay open for antibody testing at some point? So two questions from her.
So right now, we have been turning away very few people, and most of the people that have been turned away, it's either because they have a non-functioning window or they don't have an ID. So that ID, it just needs to be a photo ID with a birth date. That's it. It doesn't need to be a driver's license, although it's illegal to drive without a driver's license. But if you're a passenger, you know, just a photo ID and that's all they need, and then a functioning window, and that's for safety. So I know previously they were at some sites allowing people to open their doors, but just imagine if someone accidentally stepped on the gas and how many people that could injure. There's usually about 5 or 6. I'm looking at 6 people that are working on processing a car. So it's a safety issue. So that's why we don't allow that, or motorcycles. But as far as the antibodies test, I know the sites would welcome them. It depends on supply at the state level and if they're able to get them. And I'm not, right here we have 3 types of tests. So we have a nasal pharyngeal, that's the one that goes all the way back quite far in the nasal canal. We have the nasal anterior nares test.
It's a painful test, isn't it? I mean, people have said it's pretty invasive, right?
I wouldn't call it painful. It's definitely uncomfortable. It's very similar to the flu test. So if you've ever had a flu test, that's what that's going to feel like. So we have the anterior nares test, which just goes right up at the front part of the nose. And then we have a throat swab. So that goes back towards the tonsil area. So,
okay.
We have three types of tests here.
One more call for you. It's Pat in Bay Meadows. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Hey, Melissa, I heard you interview someone who had symptoms of no taste, no smell. So
right.
I just wanted to hear that mentioned again. I never hear it mentioned even on the national news, and I just
right.
thought that was great. But I know it's not that common, but I just thought that that should be mentioned. If somebody just has that they should go get tested.
Yeah. Lauren, if someone has lost their sense of taste or smell, they should go get tested, shouldn't they?
I've not been told that that's one of the descriptors for this.
Shouldn't the CDC add that, though? I mean, that's becoming a common symptom of COVID. What do you think?
So right now, that's not one of our symptoms here. But if they have, you know, underlying health conditions, they would fall into being able to be tested here. And I will say we're working off the honor system. So, you know, take that for what it is.
Okay, so are some people lying when they drive up to Lot J and saying they have symptoms and maybe they don't?
I'm sure that could be a possibility. If I haven't received any reports of, so-and-so, or someone came up and they didn't seem like they were whatever, because, you know, we are testing asymptomatic people. But, you know, it's not feasible with doctor's offices closed to be asking for doctor's notes. So the most good we can do here is by testing the people that come up here that meet the criteria we have. So technically, yes, people could be lying. We encourage you to not just think about yourself, but to think about your family and friends that may need this testing. But, you know, if you feel you need to be tested and you fall into that criteria, then we welcome you here.
And lastly, how much longer do you think the testing site will remain up and running, Lauren?
Right now, we've been told to stay in place. So I wish I had a clearer guideline on that, but we've been told that the site will remain open.
Okay. The site is open at Lot J every day from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. or until they hit 750 tests a day. If you have symptoms, you need to show up with your photo ID and have a car with functioning windows. You will be tested for free if you have respiratory symptoms. You don't need a doctor's note. If you have an underlying health condition but no symptoms, you can also get tested. If you're a first responder or healthcare worker, or if you've come into contact with a COVID patient, those are the main criteria for Lot J testing. And we want to thank Lauren Luna, the deployed PIO on site at the Jacksonville Regional COVID-19 testing site at Lot J, with great information for all of our listeners. Lauren, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Much more still ahead on the show. Up next.
I drove over, went into his apartment, and found him in bed, shivering, feverish, unable to get himself out of bed.
A local woman shares her dad's battle with COVID-19 and how, in caring for him, she got the virus herself. That's next.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today. April is Jazz Appreciation Month, and Electro Lounge Radio 89.9 FM HD4 celebrates the heritage and history of jazz every Sunday from sunrise to sunset. So tune in to Electro Lounge Radio 89.9 FM HD4 or online at wjct.org/jacksmusic and explore the roots of jazz from old favorites to fresh new jazz. We play it all every Sunday on Electro Lounge Radio. Jazz, America's original art form, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT.
The Voidcast from WJCT is a musical journey through Northeast Florida. I'm the host, Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw. Join me while I cut through the digital noise to share handpicked local music stories. WJCT.org/Voidcast.
Welcome back. Well, today is the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. It's a day set aside to focus on conservation and stopping the effects of climate change. With millions of us now staying at home, the Earth lately has been reclaiming itself. Have you noticed that? Ecosystems are rebounding. Animals are reclaiming habitats. Water is becoming clearer, less polluted. As we're all being encouraged to take a walk outside, including on our Jack's beaches, take a moment to consider the importance of Earth Day today and taking care of our irreplaceable planet. All right, a new study on Plaquenil we want to tell you about. That's also known as hydroxychloroquine. It's not encouraging. The study followed 368 patients in U.S. veteran hospitals and showed there were higher deaths among those given Plaquenil versus regular care. This is from the Associated Press. Now, the drug typically used to treat malaria had been widely touted by President Trump for treating the coronavirus on several occasions. Plaquenil can harm your heart and also your vision. We spoke about that with a renowned eye doctor here in Jacksonville, Dr. Arun Galani of the Galani Vision Institute. Listen to this.
One thing we know for sure is it does impact the retina, which is the film of our camera, of our eye, if you may. And of that, the most sensitive area is called the macula. This impacts the area outside of what we call the central macula and causes what we call a bullseye maculopathy. That is actually a permanent damage. But good news, it doesn't happen until long-term use.
So long-term use of Plaquenil or hydroxychloroquine can damage your retina. That is from Dr. Arun Galani of Galani Vision Institute here in Jacksonville. Meanwhile, people across the First Coast are mourning the loss of loved ones to this pandemic, and one of them is Barbara Hawes of Nocatee. Her dad, Don Hawes, died last month just shy of the age of 89 from the virus. He was one of the very first people in Duval County to pass away from COVID, she says. Barbara says her dad, Don, was in great health, living independently, and totally sharp of mind when he got sick with no underlying conditions. And he had plans for the future. A summer trip was going to be happening to New England when he got sick. And it turns out Barbara not only dealt with her father's illness and death, she also got the virus herself. Here is her COVID story. Barbara Hawes, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so sorry for the loss of your dad to COVID-19. Why don't we begin there? Tell me about your dad and his journey with this illness.
Of course. He was feeling a little sluggish, maybe around the 8th or 9th of March. By the 12th, he was running a slight fever, but still able to take care of himself, took Tylenol, went to bed, whatever he needed to do. By Friday morning, I called him. I couldn't get him to answer the phone. I drove over, went into his apartment, and found him in bed, shivering, feverish, unable to get himself out of bed. So I called 911. JFRD came in and were able to get him on a gurney and get him out and get him over to the Mayo Clinic Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last time I was with him. By the evening Saturday, their tests had come back for positive on COVID. And by 11 o'clock that night, he was on the ventilator.
Right. And he never came off it.
He never came off it. Because he was healthy, he exercised every day, you know, ran his own errands, I expected he'd come off it. He didn't have underlying pulmonary problems. He just kept getting worse. Now, he was an early case there. He was their first patient at the Mayo Clinic Hospital. So because they weren't overwhelmed at that point, I was on the phone with the doctors and the nurses all day and all night. They were very conscientious, very good about calling me, keeping me up to date. But I was talking to them instead of him. And, of course, I wasn't able to be next to him. So he was alone, and I'm sure he was scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no one, even though I was advocating for him from a distance, there was no one to be with him, you know, no one to comfort him. So I felt bad about that.
Right. That's been the hardest thing for families is the separation and not being able to be with your loved one if they're passing away or really struggling.
You know, it was heartbreaking. I felt bad that he was alone. I really hated that part.
Yeah.
But, you know, at 89, your organs can't handle that onslaught. I mean, it really came on hard. So by Thursday, the following Thursday, he was gone.
And I'm so sorry. And I wanted to ask you as well about your situation, because not only did you lose your father, you yourself contracted COVID.
True. My son, who not too long ago graduated from college, and I live in a house, there's the two of us, and but we had both been there to help him, and we contracted the virus. We weren't surprised. We were there. We were touching all surfaces, touching him. It was not unexpected once he came back with a positive test. And we were in touch with our doctors, and we were in touch with the Mayo Clinic Hospital doctors. And they all advised us, again, this is mid-March, no reason to get tested. Assume you have it because you were in direct contact.
Mm-hmm.
It developed into just a severe cold, upper respiratory, not even so much coughing, but frog in your throat, nasal congestion, and then we stopped being able to taste our food and to smell anything. Again, not unusual for when you have a cold.
Yeah. And so your sense of taste and smell, it still hasn't fully come back? Is that right?
Not fully. It was gone for maybe a good 2 weeks, maybe more, especially that sense of taste. The smell can come back, like maybe you smell the coffee or you can smell the bacon, but the taste just isn't completely there yet. It's really unusual.
Right. And it's such a strange symptom, and it's one that people, when they experience it, it's kind of, for some, it's been their first clue that they might even be positive.
Well, that's right. And by the time we started losing our sense of taste, it wasn't anything that had been reported on in the media. We'd wake up feeling okay in the morning. By midday, we were pretty starting to get sluggish. By the evening, we would have fevers. And we both kind of went through the same symptoms. It was odd. Not necessarily all on the same days, but we were having the same symptoms. And we'd have fever at night, and then by the morning, fever-free again. Felt pretty good. Midday, starting to slow down. By nighttime, just unable to function, sluggish, go to bed early, worthless.
Now that you've been through this whole experience, and you're mourning the loss of your dad, you're trying to get better yourself, what's going through your mind right now?
My first thought is, I don't think there's enough information available yet. I don't think scientists and the doctors know enough yet about the spread. Am I still contagious? Do I carry it? For how long? How many days do I need to be symptom-free? All of those things. So I'm treating myself as though I still have it. I go out very seldom. If I do have to run an errand, I'm always gloved up, masked up. And I think everyone else should feel the same way. Assume you've come in contact with somebody somewhere along the line. Assume you carry it and could spread it. And I know people want to get back to normal. I don't think we should rush it. I really don't. It's so contagious. Clearly so contagious. I really think we should be patient and wait for the scientists to come out and say, this is the strategy. This is how we need to reassess and reconnect. And it's going to take a while, and we're going to have to do it in stages.
Great words, great advice. And I want to thank you for sharing your story. And I'm so sorry for the loss of your dad as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as we all know, the restaurant industry is taking a beating right now. Here are some new numbers for you. Total restaurant transactions in America are down 43%. Full service restaurant business is down about 80%. Yes, so it's no surprise that restaurants are doing a huge pivot right now, and they're going into the grocery business. Yeah. Meredith Corey Dish of Community Loaves in Murray Hill which is just a wonderful place, is on the line with a closer look at their big pivot. Hey, Meredith.
Hey, how are you doing?
It's good to talk to you. So you did what all the other restaurants did. You shifted to to-go business only, but you're adding on to that with grocery items, right?
Yeah. So when this started, I sort of had an ethical dilemma of whether I still wanted employees to have to come into work or whether we would be furthering the spread of the virus. And so what was our position there? And it felt like if I was able to offer local producers another outlet for their produce that maybe they weren't able to sell to restaurants right now, and if I could give folks a way to get groceries and not go through the anxiety of visiting the grocery store right now, that sort of gave us a way to keep coming to work, a way to support local farm, and then feel good about continuing to come to work as well.
So what are you selling?
So we've got milk from Wainwright Dairy. We've got eggs from the farm Bethesda that we get all our eggs from. We've got produce from White Harvest Farms, which is a part of the Claire White Mission, and from Fog Song CSA out in Gainesville. And then we also get a lot of Florida-grown stuff. So we've been getting strawberries and yellow squash and things that aren't necessarily local and organic, but are regional and more affordable.
This is so great because you can come into Community Loaves in Murray Hill. It's a much smaller crowd than, say, Publix, and you can get these essential items. So what have your customers been saying to you about it?
So this has been great because at the beginning of this, there was so much fear about what were we going to do? Would we still have business? Would people still come out? And because we've done this pivot and we're able to support local farms, if anything, we're getting like people who feel so positively about us and people who have been saying such kind things and leaving big tips. And so certainly the reaction to this has been really positive.
You even did an online fundraiser to purchase a special fridge for the grocery items?
Yeah, so when I was having that anxiety at the beginning of the pandemic really coming to Jacksonville, a good friend of my mom reached out to me and said, hey, I'm going to give you $100, but in order for me to do that, you have to make a GoFundMe. And I was like averse to or against doing that. It sort of felt like asking for help, something that I didn't love the idea of, but I did do it, and she gave $100, and then a tons of great customers and friends and family jumped on board, and it allowed us to immediately go out and buy this like huge merchandising fridge so that when folks come into the bakery, they can see through the glass doors of the fridge everything we've got, and then we pack things for them with gloved hands. They don't even come in. They just look through the window and pack it up for them. But yeah, that was great when we, but also like, you know, validated the decision to sell produce and to provide an outlet for local farms is when we did that fundraiser, and within a couple hours, we raised a couple grand. That was really awesome.
We want to give quick shout outs to some other locally owned businesses that are doing the same thing as Community Loaves. They're selling produce and grocery items. Southern Roots in the downtown location, Vagabond Coffee in Murray Hill, 1748 Bakehouse on Main Street in Springfield, one of my personal favorites. Prati Italia at the St. John's Town Center, McFlamingo, they're selling produce. Maple Street Biscuit, so delicious. And even Panera Bread is now selling vegetables and milk alongside
Melissa,
its baked goods.
They're not a local business.
I know. They're a chain, the one chain I threw in there. But yeah, let's support our local businesses if we can. And are you speaking with your fellow restaurant owners in this crisis, comparing notes, Meredith, and things like that?
I'm not necessarily comparing prices because we are going on that angle of doing local organic, which is always going to be more expensive. But I am speaking to other restaurant owners, and I think those of us who were already fast casual are having an easier time because people were used to maybe coming in, grabbing and going. And that's especially true of us with bread and pastry. They would come in, buy a box of stuff and leave. So we've been able to transition easier. I think it's the folks who are fine dining who are having a harder time. But yeah, everyone's getting really creative and is at work every day and is stressed, but it's leading to some positive things.
You know, it's funny because people have been trying their hand at baking bread at home, sometimes
oh my God,
with hilarious
it's like,
results.
It's such a trend.
Yeah. Everyone's baking bread these days. But let's mention the fact that in addition to all the produce and grocery items you're now selling, Community Loaves, which is on Edgewood in Murray Hill, you're famous for your amazing bread and baked goods.
Yeah.
And you're still selling those, right?
Yeah, so we, and that is part of why I felt it was important that we stayed open through the pandemic, too, is we provide a vital food item. We provide bread. So every day of the week, other than Mondays, we bake fresh, organic sourdough bread, sell it by the loaf. We can slice it for you. Recently, we've been selling little cups of sourdough starter because everyone's baking. But yeah, every day of the week, we have fresh bread. made from scratch pastries. So that's still at the core of what we do. And we still love doing that. And it feels vitally important that we continue to do it. Yeah, especially the bread. But the pastries are an added bonus.
And are people, what are people buying the most of right now? Are they really coming
they're
in
buying
for
a lot of bread.
The bread.
I feel like, and part of that is they're not going out to eat as much. You know, so they're validating maybe buying a nicer food item like organic sourdough bread. And then they're just staying at home. And that's, I feel like, one of the biggest things for entertainment you can do right now is to eat good food. So certainly the bread is still the number one thing that we're selling. But, you know, coffee is still selling really well. We're certainly selling less meals. But, yeah, a lot of produce. And then we've been making things like soups and our white bean hummus and our whipped butter and our flavored cream cheeses that we sell by the quart or by the 8-ounce container. So it's been kind of a cool thing for us because it's encouraged us to experiment with some deli items and offer those. And people have been taking a lot of things home to make their own food at home.
Now, once this pandemic passes, will you continue with the produce items? Also, we've got an email here from Josh. He wants to know, can we place orders online and pick up?
Yeah, so that's sort of, those are two great questions. One, we can't necessarily have people pre-buy with the produce. Our challenge is once we pack it up for someone, we can't refrigerate it. So it's first come, first serve with the produce. People can certainly buy large quantities of bread and pastry ahead of time online at communitylovesjacks.com, or they can always call the shop and we'll set something aside that day. But as for now being in love with selling produce and selling deli items, whoever wants to get in on starting a little mini grocery store in Murray Hill, let me know. I'm in. I love it. I love being able to buy from local farms and saying, bring us whatever you have, we'll sell it. And people are so supportive of it. And I love that people can just stay in Murray Hill and get a gallon of milk that they like the quality of and not have to go to the grocery store. So, yeah, I want this to be a permanent thing. Yeah, call me if you're into the idea. Let's do it.
All right. And I love your positive attitude, Meredith. You can go buy Community Loaves in Murray Hill on Edgewood and get their incredible bread and baked goods, their coffee, but also Florida-grown produce, Wainwright Dairy, Bethesda Eggs, and other grocery items. This is so great. Go to communitylovesjacks.com or just drive by on Edgewood and Murray Hill. You'll see them there. They're just a fabulous locally owned restaurant. And support your local restaurants in this crisis because many of them have done this pivot and are offering grocery items, sparing you a trip to a crowded grocery store.
And I think it's also important to say that we're taking food that it's been hard for food producers to pivot to everything's being sold retail and nothing's being sold wholesale. So we have this huge amount of food production that's not geared towards grocery stores. So we're getting to redirect some of that. So those food producers then are left holding the bag, you know, so we are able to redirect that and still sell that retail, which is really where all the sales of food are going right now. People aren't eating out.
That's right. She's Meredith Corey Dish of Community Loaves in Murray Hill. Meredith, thanks so much. I'm going to stop by too.
Yay. Thanks, Melissa. It was good talking to you.
You too. Up next, bye-bye. Finding the silver linings in this pandemic, a conversation with Kelly Youngs of She Is Fierce in a moment. We'll be right back.
Cavendish Partners PA and Michael Cavendish, a law practice supporting Jacksonville's business community, downtown by appointment and on the web at cavpartners.com.
Groove to Electro Lounge Radio around the clock. Allow the sounds of chill out, down tempo, new jazz, and reggae to relax and inspire you. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The coronavirus has forced many people to work from home, but will they ever go back, even when it's safe to do so?
We're improving our capabilities in working remotely, and the attitude is changing. So absolutely, I think there's no turning back now. You're going to see major changes moving forward.
That and the latest news on coronavirus next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
For Muslims, the month of Ramadan is usually a time of gathering to eat, to pray, and to give to others. But social distancing is forcing many Muslims to adapt their traditions to be together while they're apart.
I'm planning to buy a lamb this weekend, and I want to make that and share photos. Like, that's going to be like my special like feeling it's Ramadan.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
50 years ago, 20 million Americans took part in a series of environmental teach-ins and demonstrations across the country in what would become the first Earth Day. It forced President Nixon to act, and soon after, he created the Environmental Protection Agency. We'll speak to its 15th administrator and the man now in charge, Andrew Wheeler, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, She Is Fierce, a locally based international women's network, is now featuring silver lining stories from the coronavirus experience. Every week on the She Is Fierce social media platforms, founder Kelly Youngs is interviewing women who are not just surviving, but finding ways to thrive amid this life-altering experience. If you tune in, you can watch not only powerful stories of survival and success, but also some actionable steps we can all take in our own lives to survive and thrive. Kelly Youngs is on the line now from St. Augustine. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being with us. You know, we're all looking for silver linings right now, and you're offering up some really powerful stories from women who have a lot of wisdom to share. The first in this series is an amazing woman, Charlene Landon, former VP at PGA Tour Entertainment, right?
That's right. Charlene is well known in this Jacksonville and North Florida community. She is so beloved by the people at PGA. And as all of us were stressed out that we couldn't go to the Players Championship, she was finding out that after 30 years of working at PGA and, you know, leading and creating a sense of family, she wasn't going to get the chance to retire in the fashion that she was hoping. She had to cancel her retirement parties, cancel travel, and yet every single time I've spoken to her, she has the most uplifting and positive outlook and is really trying her best to serve and be there for others. So I asked her to come on first because her story is unique and really inspiring.
Now, we have a little clip of your, it was a Zoom interview, you know, obviously yeah. You're socially distanced from Charlene. We have a little excerpt where she has some advice from her career and her thoughts about the pandemic. Let's listen.
I want to ask you, will you share your final words of wisdom? So anything that you would really want those in our community to walk away with today as they go back into life and continue to focus on being resilient.
I don't feel like I have all the answers, but I do know this. I have never felt so much like we are all in something together than I have during this experience. And so because of that, there is strength in numbers. And because we all are adapting and figuring things out and learning new things, at the end of it, the silver lining is, I hope we all do learn and take a moment to take something out of all of this. This all could not have happened without us changing.
That is so profound. This crisis is sparking all kinds of changes, Kelly, some of which we might not even realize yet.
Yes. And I mean, I was so pleased to come on after Meredith from Community Love because her spirit would have fit perfectly into the Silver Lining series, the idea that even though every single one of us is dealing with something, whether we are lucky enough to still have our jobs or businesses, but we're at home trying to manage that with our children, or we've been furloughed or let go and we're struggling to figure out what to do next, we also have opportunities. We have the chance to connect with our families again. We have the chance to relook at our businesses and maybe, you know, come up with concepts that we never would have even considered before. So for me, I think, you know, I unfortunately do not have any nursing skills. I can't sew. I'm very non-essential.
And, we've all learned how non-essential we all are, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And instead of you know, at first thinking, well, okay, I can be a good mom to my children in this period, and I can do my best to be there for the people that I employ. But also, you know, something that we're blessed enough to have, and you certainly have, Melissa, is an incredible platform to share, you know, and to uplift others. And I think that through this experience, it's been wonderful to hear. We've had people email us and call us and say, you know, these are keeping us going.
Sure.
Hearing other people's stories and hearing the positive elements of what's going on is keeping some people really, you know, in the right mindset. And I think that the more that we can do that and the more that all of us can do that, the better off we will be.
You've got a whole silver lining series at sheisfiercehq.com. Full disclosure, I do lead Jacksonville events for this great company. You also have an ongoing community coaching series for women professionals and entrepreneurs. Just some support and advice right now. Yeah?
Exactly. Yeah. So we have our silver lining series, which is really just like you heard with Charlene Landon. It's really featuring a woman's story. So how they're dealing with it and their best advice for how we can each take actionable steps to get out of this a better person, or at least a mentally well person. And then separately, we also have this incredible community coaching series that is really for professional women. It's for business owners and professionals who are trying to figure out, how do I pivot? How do I shift my business? And how do I make sure that I come out of this either intact or better than I started? So yes, you're absolutely right. People can join us at sheisfiercehq.com. Or they're also welcome to join us in our free Facebook group where a lot of these videos are taking place.
Check it out, because Kelly, coming up, she'll have interviews with author Jeanette Johnson and Jen Ernest of Chef's Garden Catering and more. So check them out on Facebook and at sheisfiercehq.com. It's the Silver Lining series. We all need those right now. Kelly, you're doing amazing work. It's so good to have you on the show and hear your voice. And I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
I know. I can't wait. Thank you so much, Melissa. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Kelly. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers and producer Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Jessica Palumbo is 89.9's news director. Our intrepid digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. And you're always a big part of what we do. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Keep calm and look for those silver linings. Talk to you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.